What's going on, everybody? I am so thankful for you tuning in. I am doing a second, so two back-to-back podcasts because it's that serious. I not only miss y'all and sharing with you guys, but I have so much on the brain that I think is pertinent to this generation and this time, and I know the Lord wants me and has been impressing upon me to share. So, let me just say this. This particular podcast will be very off-cuff. I am normally extremely prepared and have a lot of teaching notes and a lot of theological things to say, and it'll be that too, because I can't help myself. However, I want to give you guys a moment to just come into my world and hear a little bit about my side and my perspective from a more hair let down vantage point. So if y'all are okay with that, then let's dive in. All right, everybody. So those of you listening get the unique opportunity of hearing me open completely up about my experience and my journey through ministry. I've heard people say, you know, I guess that I don't necessarily feel that you have any problems. I guess that I look up to you and you've never told me that you have anything that you have wrestled with or had a hard time with. And so I've had this idea of you that is a model person. And I need to break that right now, y'all, because if you knew my story, if you knew where I came from, if you knew how I got here, maybe you would feel like, some of you listening, I can do that too. What am I even doing, number one? I ain't got nowhere, y'all. We just getting started. But I am grateful for what I have been given and the opportunities and the spaces that God has allowed me to show up, occupy, and be excellent in some days. I'm just passionate about the work I've been able to do in ministry that has built me for where I am today to feel comfortable enough to share with y'all in the infancy of what he's even getting ready to do. And so I needed to break that stigma that anybody might have, that I have anything altogether, that I'm just this extremely brilliant person that knows everything about theology. It is not so. And I want to share a little bit about my journey. So let me first start by saying this. I am from Detroit, Michigan, born and raised. And I'm not talking about the suburb of Detroit. I'm talking about 7 Mile, okay? Things were not rosy. And I did, however, among that those, you know, areas that were impoverished and the things that I was able to see, I did, however, have an opportunity to be surrounded by great people, great teachers that pulled the best out of me, despite what statistics said, given my circumstance of a single parent household and the income we were bringing in, given what statistics said we should turn out like. I had good people that told me otherwise and saw in me otherwise. And so in that, I'll just say I've always had in me a deep pursuit and drive to whatever I was going to be a part of or in, go all out. I thought that was going to look like me being a lawyer. And some might say that now I am a lawyer for the gospel. But I realized that part of whatever I was going to do and be good at, the biggest piece of that was going to be education. And so very early on, my mother was able to put me and my sister in great schools just by the favor of God. And I'm not going to get into that story, but I was able to be a part of great schools with great teachers. But guess what? In being in great schools with great teachers, I still ended up my 10th grade year being kicked out of school for fighting. You heard me right. Stephanie Anderson. Because people are always so shocked when I say that. I got kicked out of school for fighting in the 10th grade. And I wasn't even that type of student. But it happened. And sometimes you just end up becoming a product of that environment, not even on purpose. But I got kicked out of school for fighting. And I'm not saying that when I say of your environment, the school was good, but it happened. And that landed me in a place that became such a divine part of where I am now that it's scary to look back on. Getting kicked out of school for fighting in the 10th grade, I'm not recommending it to anybody. But it ended up putting me on a journey that, again, I'm speechless when I look over my life. I ended up going to a school that was outside of my district to the point I had to get bussed out. It felt like an alternative school. I'm just being 100% honest with you. It felt like an alternative school, given the fact that I had been in good schools from K through 8th and got accepted into a good school that you had to write to get into, although it was still in an environment in an area where, you know, the culture shows up. And I am now in this place where as soon as I walk in, people wanted to fight me. I couldn't make this up. They wanted to fight me because I looked different, I talked different, I was different, and I didn't even know why. I'm just like, why? I'm just giving you, painting a backdrop of the type of place that I was in. It felt like an alternative school. And I found myself being, sticking out like a sore thumb and having conversations and building relationships with my teacher surrounding what needed to be done in the school. I was going up to my teachers like, we need to be reading these books. We're not learning. This is going to be the trajectory of these students' lives if we don't change the administration. I was going in. And part of that shows up now in my purpose and has a, it makes sense in terms of just the fabric of what God was calling me to be. But here I am, the student that's got kicked out of school trying to tell people what to do in this school. And what ends up happening is that now that I'm in this space that was not what I was used to, and I was very aware that I wasn't getting what I needed for something that was very valuable to me, which was education, I made a decision my junior year to move to Atlanta, Georgia, to move all the way to Atlanta, Georgia. And when I did that, I did it with the idea in mind that I would be able to get the Hope Scholarship if I lived in Georgia for a year and went to their high school, and that I would be able to block out all of the things that happened 12th grade year that stopped me from being completely focused on changing pretty much my academic situation around. I was okay academically, but of course I had being expelled on my record, and the school that I was at was not preparing me to do well enough on ACT and SAT exams that I could get into the schools that I needed to get into. So I made that decision, very bold decision. Again, I've always had that drive. And by the time I landed in Atlanta, my senior year of high school, I promise you guys, I'm going to get into seminary. By the time I got to my senior year of high school, I had met someone that would become, again, a life-changing trajectory for where I've ended up now. And that is my husband. My senior year, after getting kicked out and then deciding that I'm going to move to Georgia in the course of 2-3 years, I landed my senior year in an AP class where I met my then friend, who became my boyfriend after high school. And he introduced me to a man named Brian Meadows, who was starting a church. And in starting this church, let me tell y'all, I was unchurched, okay? I probably was in church from the time, you know, from that I can remember up until I was about 7-8 years old. And then after that, completely not in church. And even those first 8 years was because we were made to, and my grandmother was living with us, and it was just what you did. But I don't even remember. I have very faint memories of just what was even happening. I just remember it being long and boring, if I'm being honest. That's what I remember from being 8 years old. And it wasn't until I was about 14 years old that I even went back to church with a friend and had an encounter and experience. But that stopped after about maybe 6 months and him not doing youth ministry anymore. So I'm saying all that to say my history and background in church, theology, seminary, all that, almost non-existent. Do you hear me? Almost non-existent. So I meet Paul in high school. We go to college together, and I'm introduced in my sophomore year of college to this guy he has met named Apostle Brian Meadows, and he's starting a whole church. I'm telling you, I am ignorant in church enough not to realize what it even took to start a church, but it was a good thing because I got on board because I didn't realize what it was going to take to be a part of this church plant. And I told y'all, again, I'm that person that if I do something, I am going all the way in. And it was almost like I became a seed that went into the soil of a place that I belonged, and I started to sprout in such an accelerated fashion that I didn't even know who I was. I said, what in the world? This has been in me all the time. I hope this resonates with somebody in the sense that when you get planted in the right place, in the right soil, around the right people, you will start to see your life bear fruit in ways you didn't even know existed. So to be planted in the house of the Lord will help you to flourish in the courts of our God. And that is scripture. Now, this accelerated growth under a phenomenal man of God who is a revelator, an apostle, I'm telling you, par excellence. I didn't even know what apostle was at the time. But I just, under that ministry, under that environment, I started to grow. And I said, oh my God, I absolutely love Jesus. I didn't know this world existed, this kingdom of God. I can't believe this. I didn't know. And a year after year, maybe about the first 2 years, I discovered I was a preacher. I was called to preach. There was just stuff coming out of me I didn't know was there. And it was, I was radical. You know how you are when you first get saved. I was completely radical and taken aback by what God was doing and the fact that he even existed in this way. And what did I have to do? I said, okay, I need to add language to everything I'm absorbing in a way that I can feel equipped to do what I know I'm called to do now in the most effective way possible. Hence, when I graduated from Clark Atlanta University as an English major, thinking I was going into law or at least teaching, I graduated from there and realized that ministry was going to be for the rest of my life. I had laid so many things down in my undergrad years, helping to build a church. At such a young age, I came to Embassy when I was 19, and I spent the last parts of my, really the bulk of my undergraduate experience helping to build Embassy, and we're still here today. But I graduated from undergrad and realized seminary was the next step for me because I needed to add language to what I was already doing and experiencing. Not just for me, but for the work that I knew God was going to be calling me to do. So here we are now. Told y'all I was going somewhere with this. And we are at seminary. I applied to the first one that I looked up, which was, I kept saying the real experience. It kept saying real Candler. I'm like, what is real? What do they mean? And I absolutely fell in love with just their methods and their motto and the real, which was basically saying that they have a contextual experience where you're not just in this seminary institute learning theology and not figuring out how it's going to translate into the world and the real work of ministry. And that's kind of what they were all about. And so I was excited. I was 100% on board. I got accepted and to this world-class institute. And I don't say that to brag. I say that just based off of the facts. World-class institute, and not only in theology, but also just in the university. And it was just a blessing. And here I am, probably having been in this church plant for about 4 years at that time, and going into seminary, adding language to some of the work I was already doing. And I'm fresh off the boat of undergrad and excited. And I then come to the reality of what seminary really is like. Hence me naming this particular episode, The Truth About Seminary. I spent the first year really just kind of, you know, you're getting acclimated to, I'm an academic person, so I love, and I'm also a writer, so I wouldn't say that it was rigorous in the sense that I couldn't keep up, but it's a whole nother world. They advise that, at least for Candler and most seminaries, they advise that you dedicate your time fully to this, that there's not a recommendation usually for you to be working a full-time job and doing this type of work and schooling at the same time. And there's a reason for that, because the level of rigor, the level of just significance and importance of the work that you're doing sometimes can be heavy for somebody to balance with another type of important work like teaching, which is what I tried to do. And that's for another story. So for the first year, that was me getting acclimated. I'm being real on here. So, of course, you know, my husband, Paul, who had now become my husband, we got married. And we had been married for about a year then. And we decided to have our first child, which is an amazing young boy, Daniel, 4 years old. And we had Daniel. And guess what, y'all? I got so sick. I got sick in 2014 to the point where I had to take a leave of absence. I was so sick that I had what they call hypermesis gravidarum. And I was vomiting every 30 minutes to an hour and couldn't sit through class and was pale. I was so pale that white people said I was pale. And that's when I knew. That's when I knew, okay, it's time to do something. But no, really, I sat with my advisor and she advised. And the Lord is so gracious, because she had literally gone through the same thing. And she gave me instruction on how I should navigate through it. And that was to take a leave of absence. And so I did a semester of actual classwork and a full year of contextual education work, which wasn't as heavy of a load. And I had to take a break from seminary. And so, y'all, I started this journey in 2014. So I'm not the traditional, you know, you came from undergrad, went straight to graduate school, and you finished in such a great, timely, and ideal manner. No, I was so sick, I had to take a break. Not only did I take that leave of absence, but I decided to go to work full time. So I worked as a teacher for 2.5 years before I decided to go back and finish right. So that lands me here. I did try to take some classes in between so that, you know, I wasn't so far behind. But I pretty much was starting after having like a year and some change worth of credit hours when I started back last year. And so here I am, having made the decision to recommit to this journey. I tried it, you know, when I first started with building a family, and we couldn't, you know, because I was sick, but also because we wanted to dedicate time to raising our son, and I homeschooled him. I also tried to go back while I was teaching full time and realized that that didn't work. And so now that I've tried those, you know, tried to do it all, I realized that the best way for me and my family was to be able to go back without the full time schedule, with Danny being a little older, and having the time to dedicate and commit to finishing up seminary. So here I am now, and I'm able to be a little bit more connected and sober about my seminary experience in a way that I can share with you what seminary is really like. So here we are. The truth about seminary. I know y'all are like, so you did all that to get to here? I know. I said this was going to be off the cuff, but this is for those that, you know, are interested in really hearing just kind of the realities and the hard parts and the parts that aren't so glamorous about the journey of accomplishing and reaching toward a goal. And it makes graduation so much sweeter, I tell you, because when I tell you, when I walk across that stage, baby. For those of you listening, don't know, baby, that's just slang for listen. I'm going to be excited. All right. So few things when it comes to the truth about seminary. It is not for the faint of heart. We already talked about the rigor level and just the level of commitment that most seminaries will have. If you can do something part-time, if you can do a work study, if you can do something on the side, do that, because seminary is preparing you for work that you're going to be doing for the rest of your life. And so the way it prepares you is as if it's all of your life, as it should. And so that's number one. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. Make sure that you have the time, the space to do it, because the truth is, it is a huge commitment, just like any higher educational degree that you may be going after. The second thing I realized is that I was occupying a space that was diverse and not diverse in many ways. It was diverse in the sense that there were lots of different denominations, predominantly United Methodist, but that there were Baptists and there were AME and there were no other non-denominational. there were just such a mixture and blend of Episcopal and Pentecostal and just so many different denominations that were diverse in that sense. However, it was not diverse in terms of ethnicity. So there would be a handful of Black students and there would be a room full of white students. And when I first started, I was just more excited about the program to realize it. But now that I'm in my third year, it's starting to see, it has already begun to seep in that, wow, you know, there's some real issues here at Candler that are a reflection of the real issues we deal with in the world. And how do you navigate through that space as a Black woman that is, you know, passionate about diversity, but has to be reminded daily that there exists still systemic racism. And Candler really became a reality of that for me. And of course, you have different seminaries. Different seminaries have their different issues and challenges that they present. Now, Candler does its best to be inclusive in more ways than probably other seminaries that are predominantly white. But there are, of course, some ways that it is not inclusive. And so I wrestled with that probably last year, realizing that there were some behaviors and some systems that had been complicit with some of the racial issues and injustices that we were seeing. And that there were some issues surrounding LGBTQIA communities that were being talked about and discussed and acted on more than racial and social injustices dealing with the Black community. And sometimes that hurt. And there were conversations we would have where, you know, things like Eric Garner or, you know, Black Lives Matter and police brutality would come up, and you'd have students who would just flat out ask, why was the person standing outside trying to sell cigarettes instead of why did a police officer choke him to death when he wasn't doing anything violent? And so those types of real, very real issues came up, and I started to realize, wow, okay, so now I'm getting a little bit more sober, and instead of being like super excited, I'm starting to realize, okay, these are the real issues in the underbelly of not only what we're dealing with here, but it's a reflection of what we're dealing with in the Atlanta community and in our nation as a whole. And how do I move through this space and still be Christian and still have this passion for diverse churches when there's a very real issue that needs to be dealt with, like racism? One of the reasons why I wanted to get on and do this podcast is because, and I hope I don't sound all over the place, but it's because I was able to have, number one, at the top of the year, a class that helped me digest what I had been realizing about these spaces in such a way that was therapeutic. I had a Black professor named Dr. Fluker who had been a theology professor and taught at Harvard. And he brought up the very real issues of not just racism at, you know, in these institutions and these theological institutions, but even the respectability politics of Black students who also can be complicit with this so that they can fit into this culture in order to not or almost kind of ignore the reality of what it means to move in these spaces as a Black man or a Black woman. And these are hard conversations that weren't being had. At least I hadn't been taking the classes where the conversations were being had that I was able to have in my J term. And it really helped me to process and digest what I started to realize was another truth and reality about this particular seminary and seminaries in other places that are PWI, predominantly white institutions. So depending on where you go, there will be issues in your seminary, in your theology school, whether it's racism, whether it's social injustices regarding immigration or LGBTQIA discrimination. And when I say LGBTQIA discrimination, it doesn't mean that I agree with some of the agendas, but I do agree that they are human and that there are things that we need to have in place where we're not discriminating against them and making their lives harder instead of welcoming them in a way that says, hey, maybe you can't stay the way you are when you come in this space, but I'm definitely not going to abuse you for struggling with the way you identify yourself. And so whatever your issue is and whatever your stance is or whatever your thing might be, realize and recognize that that might show up in whatever space you're in at the seminary or theology school that you decide to go to. And so for me and for Candler, this is some of the issues that has arisen that have struck me. And that is the underbelly of racism. And I'll say this, Candler is not a racist institution. I think that what has more so been my experience is just the lack of understanding and awareness of white privilege. But I'm also saying that to say that there are some phenomenal students that I was able to sit with today who are working diligently to have those hard conversations surrounding racial issues and racial injustice systemically and particularly surrounding gentrification. So, of course, we know that Atlanta right now is being gentrified, okay? Gentrification is when pretty much developers begin to come into communities that are low income and build these high rises and buy these homes that cause the property value to go up or the rent to go up or whatever values to go up that push lower income Black people basically out of these areas and bring in white people. This is a huge reality that is happening right now in Atlanta. And I had a chance to sit today with a group of students that I work with every other Monday in my contextual site. And we talked about today how that area that they are, this particular Candler grad is pastoring, is complicit in the gentrification and how she's doing the work to make sure that she makes her congregation aware of how we have been, how they've been a part of that, how they can help transform it. And I really appreciated how the students in my class, my Con Ed site, the white students were really able to stand up and vocalize what they want to do, how they see it, how they can use their white privilege, how they can use their whiteness to bring about true transformation and partner with Black students, Black leaders, Black pastors, and people in the community to make sure that this is not going to be the future of Atlanta. This is not going to be the future of the church. This is not going to be the future of our generation. And it almost brings me to tears. Because there's truly, I believe and I see it, a generation of people who are different, who see their neighbor and they see the struggles and they see the issues that are plaguing the people that don't look like them, and they really want to make a difference. Their parents or their grandparents and their ancestors may not have sung the same tune, but I sit across from some amazing people who are singing a new song, and it looks more like the gospel than anything that we've sometimes seen in these conservative or more even LGBTQIA and liberal churches that would rather remain silent and therefore complicit with the issues we see arising in our Black communities. And so while yes, this is one of the realities and truths about the seminary I attend, I want to go on record of saying that I saw today that there are individuals who are passionate about and currently doing the work of making sure that this is not the reality. And of course, it's not just gonna happen with one side. Black people also have to make sure that we are vocal and that we are active in making sure that we're voting and that we are involved in these conversations and have a seat at the table to bring in affordable housing that will not have our own people being displaced. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get emotional, but as I talked about, you know, just the truth about seminary, this is the reality that we're facing right now in the Atlanta community, because I go to Candler and we're so connected with this area in Atlanta, it's affecting us and it's causing us to have these types of important conversations. So, yeah, this is one of the realities of my seminary. You know, when I say truth about seminary, every place is going to have its underbelly, its problem. And, you know, this journey has really helped me to define and shape and build character around what I am called to do in the earth. From the time I, you know, was kicked out of school and moved into a community that was coming from a community that was low income, moving into a community that was even more low income and plagued with crime and violence. I know firsthand, you know, some of the needs that those individuals have, that they are not inhumane just because of their circumstance. But I also know the other side of the coin, in the sense that we want to make sure that we're providing safe places for our communities to exist. We don't want crime. We don't want these things. But we also have to provide solutions, recreational centers, and people and leadership that will help deal with the root of these issues that may be plaguing the low-income communities. And so I realize that, you know, from beginning to end, God has just really been working the tapestry of who I'm called to be, how I'm called to move in the earth, in order to see a truly diverse church, which I believe I'm called to either occupy or build. I'm still unraveling that. I'm still denying some things, y'all, because people have come up to me and stated the obvious. But, you know, I'm either called to occupy or build. And I want to shout out, you know, Mike Todd, who is doing that, who is truly building a diverse, not just racially, but generationally, place for people to exist. Because it's neither Black nor white, Jew nor Gentile, slave nor free. It's about the body of Christ. But we can't say that and ignore the issues that plague our neighbors. So I am not ignorant of these things because I want to occupy or build a diverse church. I am just more passionate about seeing it manifest, because I know that just like I sat in those rooms today and saw how it takes more than just the Black community, but also the white community to do these things, I know that it's important and that it can be a reality for a diverse, multicultural church to exist in order to really begin to see His kingdom come and His will be done in the earth. So, y'all, this was a very off-the-cuff podcast, but you have hurt my heart, and I'm going to still publish this, and I, you know, hope that this, you know, has provided just some reality, some raw realities, not just of seminary, but of the work that God sometimes does and the journey that it takes for us to get to a place where we can realize what we are called to do. And maybe your journey wasn't through seminary. Maybe it was just through being a part of a church, connected to a church or a community. But I wanted to share just the raw side and the real side of what it looks like to go through this journey of ministry and just tell the truth. And so that's my truth. I hope that, you know, you heard my heart today, that I wasn't too all over the place and off the cuff. Our next one will definitely be more structured, but I wanted to just bare my soul for those listening and those who want to hear, have an ear to hear these types of things concerning the reality and the truth about ministry and about seminary. All right. Until next time, I will catch y'all later. Bye-bye. First of all, y'all are so bomb for letting me have the space just now to bare my soul. I wouldn't even call it a rant. I would just say being 100% real about my journey and my time and the realities that I have come to learn about seminary. If this was helpful to you, I hope that you are able to share and pass this on, not just verbally, but making sure you share it on your social media platforms with others who you feel it would be helpful to, whether they're going into seminary, considering seminary, or just ministry, period. Okay? Make sure you share, make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. And until next time, I love y'all and thanks for tuning in.